Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast. It's episode 23, Geobash Recap. I want to welcome everyone to the show. If you want to call in tonight, it's a live show, 724-444-7444, and the TalkCast ID is 7525. If you don't have a PIN, go ahead and dial Geocache 01 or Geocache 02 on your PIN pad, and that will get you into our live lines, and we can talk tonight a little bit about the Geobash. But first, since last week we had a phone call, someone had a question about GSAC, so I'm going to go ahead and play that for you.
This is Criswell. I have a question about GSAC. Your discussions were pretty detailed, and I have to admit I was very confused, and I just like to have it made simple. I'm doing a few games at the caching place, and they require you to find certain kinds of caches. For example, a cache with D and H in the GC number, or one that has the words either devil or gate in the name and the description. Now, if I had GSAC, can I ask it to just pull out all the 500 nearest caches that have DH in them, or all the 500 nearest caches that have the word devil or gate in the name or the description? Can GSAC do that? This is Criswell. Thank you very much.
Yes,
bye.
Criswell, that's a real easy thing to do in GSAC. What I would do is just go ahead and, like you said, load all of your 500, pocket query of all of your caches that are closest to you. And then there's two different search bars in the top. One that's called code, and that's where you would search for the GC number. So if you wanted to type in something, for instance, that had DC or any other combination of anything in it, you could do that, and it would pull up in a filter the things. It would pull up just the caches from your database that had those two things in the GC number. And then the other thing is like a name search, and you can search in there for the same thing. So if you wanted to pull up a cache that had devils or gate in the name, you could do that. So that's the fairly simple way to go ahead and do that in GSAC. So if you have any other questions, if anyone has any other questions during the week, go ahead and give us a call. The phone number for our voicemail is 206-350-3GPS. And now we're going to get to the Midwest Geobash. So we actually have a couple people on our line tonight. We've got Daryl W4 and Firefly03 and GeoAddict. And we had Moscow32 dialed in, but he just disconnected. So if you want to connect again, Moscow32, go ahead and we'll get you on the line. So, everybody, welcome to the call.
Hello.
Hi.
So, I didn't get to make it to the Geobash, so let's start out a little bit. What day did you guys get down to the Geobash?
Well, we got down there with some friends of ours on Thursday, checked in about midday on Friday after an FTF hunt down there.
And I got up there probably early afternoon on Friday.
So give me a little rundown. What did you guys do once you got there? Like I said, I've never been to a Geobash. I've never been to a bigger event. Tell me what went on.
Well, it's basically a very disorganized event, and that's intentional. They actually want it to be something like, if you're familiar with bar camps, something on those kind of lines. So they have a schedule posted or released when you get there, but they'll make minor changes to it, and they don't tell you where the stuff is going to be because they do have a tendency to move it around. But when we got there, we were setting up to do some recording in the campgrounds. Got a couple of interviews recorded and recorded the first episode of the Cachers of the Round Table, which is going to be released soon.
And once Daryl had everything set up, I actually headed back to the registration. And when we got the registration, we actually got a bag that had some swag in it. One of the swag was pins. So I immediately tried to run around and fulfill my full set for pins. And it was their way of getting people to mingle and try to meet each other. So I had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, my first thing was is I set up my campground. I went around trying to maybe find some Michigan cachers and ended up setting up my campsite next to Red Rose from Ann Arbor. And this is my first time camping since probably high school, which had my family worried, but but it worked out great. Everything went well, and I was able to get to the registration just before they were closing, and Lady B40 helped me get through the registration, get all my stuff, and apparently I had the pins that I had were three flamingos, so those were, at that time, very highly prized, very difficult to find. Everybody was looking for them. So I found my duck and my penguin pretty quick so that I had the three pins for the 3 years of the geobash.
Yeah, those three pins represented the mascots for each of those 3 years. This year was the duck. Last year was a flamingo?
Last year was penguin, and then the first year was the flamingo.
Right. So that's how they picked those three pins. So presumably next year we'll have four pins.
And there's a debate on the Midwest Geobash forums, I see, about what bird they might use next year. Some are advocating a parrot, and others are advocating an ostrich or a turkey. So we'll have to wait for the Geobash higher powers to come up with next year's bird.
Yeah, the word is that they're going to let those be debated for a while to stir up some activity on the forums.
That sounds like a good idea. we talked a little bit in the pre-show here before we actually started recording about next year's location, and you guys, since I wasn't there, go ahead and tell me about that.
Well, next year they're going to do it at the same facility, which is the Noble County Fairgrounds, and it's going to be the first week of August. I don't have those dates handy, but I think it's like August 6th and 7th or something to that effect.
And didn't they say that they were going to perhaps expand the number of days? I know that people who were volunteers and so on, they were able to get to the campground and register early, like on Wednesday or Thursday. But then for the rest of us, it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But they were talking, I guess, about expanding those 3 days a little bit further.
Yeah, I know that they did say something about that. The very first one was about a week long, and I guess they decided that was too long, so they just doing it a longer weekend. But I think they said they were going to try to have it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so it was going to be a total of 4 days this year.
Well, that makes sense. And I have to say, the people in Kendallville and Noble County were great. The people from the fairground were great, and the I guess we had a lot of support from the Noble County Convention and Visitors Bureau. So good location, and it's nice to be in an area where geocaching is welcomed and really embraced by the people in the community.
Now, I hope next year that I can make it. Hopefully my cousins don't decide to get married next year, because that's why I couldn't make it this year, is because my cousins got married. And actually, what really stunk, I would have actually rather been at the bash, because we were going from the wedding to their after party thing, and my brakes on my car gave out. So I would have definitely rather been at the geobash, but hopefully next year I'll be able to make it.
Well, I ended up staying a little bit longer than I had wanted to on Sunday. After I finished packing up, I found that I had a lot of the stuff in my minivan, which has an automatic lift gate and things like that. So I guess I had run down the battery opening and closing the car automatically over the weekend. So I had to call out AAA to give me a jump. And so I wasn't real sure about whether I could get the car restarted again. So all the caches that I had planned to maybe hit on my way home, I had to forego. So next year when I'm on my way down, I'll have to do a lot more caching. Those caches will probably be there for me on the way back.
Yeah,
so,
you could have a good number of caches out there that were placed specifically to pump up the cache volume in the area. And
well, I know.
Hides.
Sorry, Daryl. What were you saying?
I just was saying that there were some really good hides out there.
Well, I reached my 200 milestone, 200th find milestone while I was up there. So I was trying to decide which one to make my 200th, and Mr. Incredible had a series of two caches that had the partial coordinates for the final cache, and this one flew east and one flew west and one flew over the cuckoo's nest, and the last one was one flew over the cuckoo's nest. So I made that one my 200th.
Oh, very cool.
Congratulations.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, it seems like I live about an hour away from the fairgrounds, and I had people taking trips out here that were saying, you know, we're hitting these on our way or to or from or on a day trip from the campground. So it seemed like people were making it pretty far away from the campground to hit caches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we saw some people who went as far as like 60, 70 miles, I think they were saying, just because they were in town from somewhere, you know, outside of the Midwest and just wanted to get a cache in Michigan, Ohio. So someone said, I think, that they went into Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the area. They wanted to do it.
I ran into a son and a father team that at one of the Spirit Quest caches out there, and they said they were their goal was to cache in five states. They were from Wisconsin, so they hit in Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan. So they were shooting for that. And I know that there were some northern Illinois cachers that were by my campsite, and they were going to head the other direction. They were heading south after they left to go down to Fort Wayne and pick up a bunch of caches in Fort Wayne.
Now, Daryl and Adrian, is this the first time you've cached in Indiana?
It was.
Yes.
Congratulations. I saw that you guys hit a bunch of the ISQs and some stuff like that, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We even got an FTF on one of them.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, surprisingly, there was a FTF, a cache published. What was it? I think it was west of the venue by about 7 miles, and no one went for it.
Really?
So we got lucky. We were the total opposite direction. We were staying down in Auburn, and that's about a 20-minute drive from there to the venue, and then it was about another 10 minutes. So half an hour later, no one had found it, and we got the FTF.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about the sessions that went on. Did any of you guys make it to the sessions?
We made it to a few of the sessions. I had actually hurt my leg, or my foot, and that was kind of interesting. But the podcaster was the first session on Saturday, which was actually a meet and greet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a blast.
Yes.
And especially interesting because I was running around on a sprained ankle, taking photos for Sunny and Sandy. And
hopping up on the table to take photos.
Yeah, I was worried about you, Daryl. You were those tables were sagging a little bit, and you were trying to find the leg to make sure you had a little bit more stability on those tables.
Yeah.
I was envisioning taking him to the hospital.
Yeah, but it was fun. I did a lot of the audio tech work for them. Ran around taking photos, just being a general madman, which was nice after having set most of the day on Thursday. But that was probably my favorite session of the whole thing, just because it was kind of cool to sit down and, well, or run around in my case, and see them put together their podcast. And that's actually going to be their 115th episode, which hits the feed, I think, on August
30th, yes.
Or September 3rd.
July
30th, I'm sorry.
Yeah. One of those months coming up soon.
Yeah, one of the months coming up in, you know, a very short time.
I enjoyed seeing Sunny and Sandy and getting to meet with them. And I also attended a session that was in the morning on puzzle caches. It was put on by Mike of the Tiki Birds.
Yeah.
And he did an excellent job, and I guess his PowerPoint's going to be posted on the forums, or will be the updated PowerPoint. But it was really interesting to see how you go about solving some of these confounding ciphers and so on. So it was I thought it was very useful for me to sit in on that one.
Yeah, and he did that session back during the chili cook-off out in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, very similar one.
So that was like his dry run, and this was his cleaned-up version.
Yeah.
Then after that, they had a session of Meet the Reviewers, which Mikey from Tiki Birds was on that as Tiki, and then they had three of the other reviewers there. And it just was basically a Q&A session for people to kind of drill the reviewers and get a feel for what it's like and what flies and what doesn't.
Do you remember what the other couple of reviewers, what their names were?
You know, it totally escapes me, but none of them were from any of the areas that I cash in, so.
Yeah,
there was Mike from the Tiki Birds from Michigan, and then they had one who was actually originally from Iowa and had moved to Wisconsin, but and is still reviewing caches for Iowa because he knows that area, but they had too many reviewers for Wisconsin, so they asked him to review caches in Iowa, and then I think the others were for Electric Mouse, I know is one that I've come across because my parents, and I used to live in Illinois, and my parents are still there, so I see things published by her, and she's in Illinois.
Where in Illinois did you used to live?
I used to live in the Chicago area, a northwest suburb called Mount Prospect, and my parents now live out in Huntley, Illinois. So,
I used to live in Batavia.
Oh, great! Yeah, that's not too far away, and so I'm actually starting to get logged a lot of the close in caches to my parents' house. So I've been working my way out and stuff. But it was nice to sit down with some of the cashers from the Northern Illinois Caching Organization to talk to them about the caches in their area and stuff.
Okay, so give me a little bit more of an idea then, too. After the sessions that went on and different things like that, what else was there to do at the bash? Like, there's obviously sessions, and you could obviously go out and do caches in the area, but what else could you do there?
Well, they did have one bar that barn set up specifically for travel bugs and geocoins, for trading of those and discovering of those. And then there was also the flea market that was going on. I think they had that for a couple hours on Friday, and then again on Saturday. And they had a couple of coin vendors there and a couple other people who were just selling their wares.
And in the registration area, they also had people would bring signature items that had maybe the duck theme and stuff. I brought a bunch of ducks that I had, glow-in-the-dark ducks that I had put my name on and so on. And so when they got in there, there were people who put some of these SIG items out there, and so you could pick those up. And so I got a nice bag full of different SIG items.
And, of course, there was a little bit of coin trading going on, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and there was the Geocoin Poker Tournament, the Texas Hold'em, and I think even this year there was a Euchre tournament.
Yep.
Geocoin Euchre tournament.
Yep, and that was Saturday.
And then both nights, actually all nights of the Geobash, including Thursday for the volunteers only, they had Area 51, which was the party
area,
nightclub,
yeah,
kind of area. And on Saturday night, Parents of Sam actually hosted an off-site event at the Best Western that was right there, and they had about 300 people there for coin trading.
Oh, wow.
That was a blast.
Yeah.
That was pretty crowded.
Yeah, they had a conference room that could hold maybe 40, 50 people, and the lobby and the lounge area, in total, maybe the whole area could hold nicely about 100, 150 people, and they had 300 people there.
We also had quite
a
few people sitting outside in the front doing some coin trading who never came in the building, too.
I ran into some people that were coming down for some of the popcorn stuff that were not geocachers, and I heard people trying to explain geocaching to them and stuff, and they were just kind of, they were a little bit lost, I think, and overwhelmed by all the people.
Mm-hmm. The Best Western actually was a very nice venue because since it was right beside the fairgrounds, they actually removed part of the fence so there was free access back and forth. And also the Best Western had a banner out front that said, Welcome Midwest Geobasher 2007.
Yeah, if you go to the podcaster's site, their travel caching blog, I think is what they call it, they actually do have photos of that hotel with the banner. It's pretty cool to just see it again and realize that this event is that big, that pretty much that entire hotel was taken up by geobashers, and that wasn't even half the people at the bash.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was kind of surprised when I saw Sunny and Sandy, and they said, you know, when they were at the Temecula event, that they only had about five or six people there when they were recording their show, and I was pretty glad to see the turnout that we had. We had probably about 50 people in that room.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it kept growing throughout the show as well.
Oh, yeah.
Well, at 8:30 in the morning, that was a little bit early for a lot of people to show up, and especially Sunny and Sandy, who are from the West Coast.
Yeah, that's fairly early for them.
Yeah, they did a really good job, though.
Yeah, I saw a good write-up in the newspaper, actually, from that area, and they said that, like, pretty much every hotel was booked and any place to stay was booked forever, and it sounded like they did a pretty good job on writing it up, and hopefully the people of the area got a good idea and a good taste for what geocachers are all about.
Yeah, well, one of the things, too, is that the local media really did a good job of getting the word out. We went to this little really awesome pizza place called Julie's Restaurant.
Julie's Pizza.
Julie's Family Pizza, just south, I think it was, of the venue. Do you remember the name of the city?
Started with an A, had a V and D in there.
Avila?
Yes,
that's it.
Avila or whatever. Avila or Avila, I'm one of those two.
Absolutely wonderful little place, and very talkative gentleman who owns the place. And they were dead down there because of some Three Rivers Festival. But he was aware of the geocaching stuff going on. The problem was no one really knew what geocaching was.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, and certainly, just as an example of the impact on the area, is that the weekend of the geobash was Harry Potter, you know, book release weekend, and so a lot of the cachers, they had posted the name of the local bookstore on there, and a lot of the geocachers went and ordered their books through this through the Kendallville bookstore, and so I'm sure that they sold a lot more books than they normally would have just because the geobash was in town.
Yeah, well, one of the more entertaining moments was when we walked into the local Kendallville Walmart and they had a sign up for Harry Potter, but the only thing we really noticed was at the very bottom it said Muggles Welcome.
It almost makes you want to take that sign and take it home with you.
Yeah, well, I did get a picture of it with the camera phone, but I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. Just one of those priceless moments.
It's kind of funny how we as geocachers stole that whole idea of Muggles, and then it happened to be there at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. That sounds like you guys had a lot of fun the past weekend.
Oh, yeah.
It was great to run a lot of other geocachers from the region. I think there was even a group of geocachers, kids that were probably from college age and stuff, and they were out here, I believe, from like California. So it attracted people as far away as that.
Yeah, and we did have a good variety of ages and backgrounds there. You know, we had a number of kids who were there, from college and helping out or whatnot. A lot of families there. Yeah, a lot of retirees, the whole gamut.
Yeah, we actually even ran into one cashier who was in from Denmark.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was talking with him, and it ended up that he was actually there on business, but it fell in the same weekend, so he was able to stop by the geobash, too.
He was probably, to his boss, probably said, hey, I really want to go this weekend, and not telling his boss why.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else, you guys? I don't really know what went on since I wasn't there. Anything else you guys want to bring up, you want to talk about? Feel free, go ahead.
for the camping, if I probably say, you know, one thing that, you know, that was of concern, and it really didn't present a too big of a problem for me, was that I was walking around the campground. I know they talked about, you know, there were showers available, warm showers available, but I could only find two. So
yeah,
for the entire campground.
The word is there were only two showers available. And one of the other big complaints that I heard from a lot of the campers was that because the road was right there, it was really, really hard to get out and get some sleep because of all the noise.
I also heard because of the trains, there was a lot of people who heard from
train.
The trains right there.
Yeah.
I can sleep through almost anything, so it wasn't a problem for me.
Well, from the little bit that I saw and from what I heard, the Best Western right next door is highly recommended.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Holiday Inn just down the street. But if we were to go back again, and we're probably not going to go next year because we really want to try to get out to Geo Woodstock, and that's probably going to take all of our efforts
day.
And resources, yeah, resources, including vacation days. We're probably not going to go again, though, next year. But I highly recommend doing the Auburn, Indiana thing. It's right off of 69, so it's easy access. It's about 20 minutes away. And one of our complaints with the Kendallville area was that there really wasn't a whole lot of food to be had.
Yeah.
You know, and actually the food on the venue this time was supposed to be really good. After last year's bad experience with food, we weren't willing to give it a shot this year.
Yeah.
So next year I'd recommend buying those food tickets.
The one thing that I was actually surprised that was not happening during the Geobash was selling of food or water specifically. There was a 4-H group who was there selling ice cream, but there was no other beverages or anything else like that being sold. So I was kind of surprised to see that.
And you had to go to around the corner to the CVS to get that kind of stuff.
And even though they close at 9, they're always closing early. Just
yeah.
Give everybody warning.
Yeah, if
that.
You go, it allow at least 15 minutes early, because the 2 days they were there, that we were there, they closed the doors. Once they locked us in, once they closed us out early.
We got there 10 till 9, and the doors was locked, and they would not let us in.
Man. You'd think that with everybody in town, they would at least keep the doors open long enough for you guys to get in.
That means it's about that much longer that they got to stay there before they can leave.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
I come from a small town. It's a small town mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what else? Like, what was you guys' highlight for the weekend? Like, if you were gonna tell someone about it, what would be the thing that you guys said that was your most favorite thing of the Geobash?
Well, mine was definitely the Podcacher meet and greet, because that I really enjoyed. It's something that's familiar to me, but I really enjoyed seeing it from the other side again. And then second favorite was definitely that off-site trading party. That was just amazing.
Coins! I love coins. That for me was an awesome experience. Not only did I get a chance to see some coins that I've never seen before, but I got a chance to see faces with the coin designs. So I just, that for me was just awesome.
So did you guys trade a lot of coins? Did you guys get a lot of new ones? Did you buy any new ones?
Oh, yeah.
She is a trading maniac.
I think I counted and I did about 200 trades.
Oh, my. So you guys don't have any of your own coins left because you traded them all.
Believe it or not, I actually still do have quite a few of our coins.
we have quite a few coins because we still have some of our mini coins left, as well as some of the silver pepper coins. So
We actually had path tags made, and I was actually getting coins for the path tag.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was kind of impressed there because I was not passing out path tags to get coins. I was passing them out because that was our signature item for the event.
Mm-hmm.
But people kept insisting that I take the coins, so I wasn't going to argue.
not when you love coins like that.
No.
So, Geoaddict, what would you say was your favorite thing of the weekend?
I think I like, you know, it was good to see Sunny and Sandy and meet with them on the Podcacher meet and greet, and also outside of that meet and greet, they were around in the venue, so that was fun to see them in person. And just in general, getting to meet with people from all over the region and talk about geocaching with them. I was joking with my family that all the various gadgets that I have that they make fun of, I said a lot of people up there thought they were so cool. So I said I was in my element up there.
Yeah, it was impressive seeing everyone playing with their gadgets too, mm-hmm. and the variety that was there. And you had everyone from the early GPS users without much hardware to people using iPhones to look up and log caches as they were en route. So you had pretty much the whole gamut there.
Yeah, I ran into somebody who sent me an email before I went up there. The Lost Poets were their names, and they I kind of gave up hope for finding them because there were just so many campsites and so many places people out there. And as I was walking over to the event over at the Best Western, I found their campsite. So I went up there and I talked with them, and they it turns out they said they only have 38 caches so under their belt. So they're relatively new caches, and I think this was their first event, but they certainly sound like they were hooked. So good to talk to them.
We ran into someone else too that had made that their first event, and it's just one of those, you know, what are they going to think about every other event after they've done something big?
Yeah.
So what would be last thing here before we get going, but what would be one thing that you would give advice for people going next year?
Bring water and lots of it.
Yeah, definitely come prepared. I'd say if you can stay off-site, that's probably preferable because, among other things, the internet access wasn't available as much as they had hoped it would be on site. So logging caches was a problem.
Yeah, I bet with everybody on there, it probably was too.
Well, and I think their access point that they were using had a hard limit of MAC addresses because it seemed that fairly early on in the day, it stopped actually serving out IP addresses.
How was the radio? I know that they had the Midwest Geobash radio. How was that?
Well, they actually pumped that through the PA system. So, you know, you really didn't see anyone on the radios. No one was listening to the radios at the campsite, at least that I saw. But as people walked around the grounds themselves outside of the campsite, people were listening to the radio, but it was pumped through the PA system. Some basic background noise.
I tried to listen to it. I tried to listen to it over the airwaves for a little bit, but all I got was static. So I was more listening to it when it was pumped through the speakers. But I think if anybody comes, you know, certainly find some time to go out and maybe do some caches or get out there early and do caches because there's a lot of people hitting the same spot. So we met a lot of cachers while we were out doing some caching that afternoon.
Yeah, when we went out Saturday, it was pretty much, you know, past the log from one cacher to another.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It wasn't as bad as some events that we've been to, though. We've been to some events where it's literally, you know, 10 people standing around. But when we were going, it was normally only one or two other cachers that were there that we ran into, so it wasn't quite as bad.
But if you got more out of town into the, they had a number of the Indiana Spirit Quest series, and so there were some very nice historical cemeteries that we could go see. There was one with a chapel, and it was just beautiful, just a small little chapel with angels on each corner and so on. It was very, very neat to see some of those things, you know.
Yeah, I think we hit that one as well.
Mm-hmm. I love the old cemeteries. I love walking around looking and seeing how old those tombstones are, and I'm just always amazed at just how well they hold up. And sometimes I'm also just amazed at just how much wear there is.
You should look up my I've got a cache called Small Land. You should look up that one. That one, there's like, I think there's 3 headstones in it. And they're all fairly old, so you should look up that one. I offhand don't know the GC number, but you should look that one up. And next time you're around in the area, hit that one.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
Yeah, there were cemeteries that we hit out there where there's head markers in the woods.
Yeah.
Some big monuments and stuff just kind of tucked away. It was really bizarre.
Kind of eerie.
And then, I don't know, Geoaddict, did you hit that one just outside of Auburn that had this really cool big brick memorial?
No, I missed that one.
Oh, that was very cool. Mm-hmm. And the cemetery had been recently redone. They went and repaired a number of the headstones. It's well-maintained,
yeah.
But it was in the shape of an L, as if it had been a building in the corner, like a little chapel. But it was all like Civil War vets and
Neat.
Later.
I'll have to make sure to hit that one next
that
year. I think
one.
I think part of my problem was is I did caches along the route, and then there was a bookmark list that I believe Person Snail put together, and so I used that, did a pocket query off of that, and unfortunately that missed a lot of the ones outside, so I had to go off of Bus Yard and Nurse Nana's lists because they just loaded. I think they just picked the geobash and then hit, give me the closest 500 caches. So they had a lot more outside the area than I did.
Well, it sounds fun, and I wish I could have been there, but like I said, missed it. So, so hopefully next year. But thank you all for joining us this week. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm glad that I feel like I was actually at the bash, even though I wasn't, now that I've heard so much from you guys. So thanks again for being here tonight. And one thing I did want to mention before we get out of here is this weekend, or week, we got new forums. So we actually have forums, and they can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. And that's the same place that you'll find all of our show notes. You'll find that at geocachingpodcast.info. And this podcast is recorded live and every Tuesday at 9 p.m. And you can call in 724-444-7444 and put in our ID 7525 or go to talkshoe.com and you can listen live and be in our chat room here too. So the more people, the better. So we're looking forward to next week, and hopefully we have a good amount of people next week for our podcast. So thanks again, everybody, for being here. I want to thank Moscow32 for being in our chat room, DarylW4 and Firefly, and GeoAddict for being on the show with us tonight. So with that, thanks for being on the show. Some of the music on the show today was provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.